I see performance as it's a cry for help. I know it's like we're trying to be nice, right? You have a bad day. And so we just like, okay, I'll handle it. So if we, instead of sweeping it under the rug when something initially happens, we actually ask them, like, hey, this isn't like you. You know, what's going on? Like, let me help you.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back. I have a great conversation to share with you today. As leaders, I think you'll appreciate the deep dive my guest and I take on the impact that the level of engagement an employee feels can have on an organization. You have surely experienced one of your star employees, the one that goes over and above every single time and knocks it out of the park, suddenly declining in performance and interest in their work. And this ebb and flow is natural, but not to be taken for granted, because this decline in performance is typically a signpost for something under the surface. And rather than waiting for those lagging indicators to surface, you may want to address it head on. My guest today is Dawn Ellery. Dawn spent 25 years in human resources, specifically leading total rewards teams across multiple industries. Dawn is wrapping up her book coming out in the fall, Dirty Little HR Secrets, Why Employers Are Losing Billions on Engagement and How You Can Turn It Around. She's also a strong advocate for mental health awareness in the workplace. You'll hear some great statistics in this interview that are really astounding and bring to light the value of listening to your employees to understand what might be going on. There will be a future episode on implementing a responsive listening strategy, but Dawn and I start the conversation in this episode. I hope you enjoy. All right, Dawn, welcome to the show. We have with us Dawn Ellery. It's so good to have you.
Thanks, Wendy. Great to be here.
So glad to have you here. And I know you've spent some time in the corporate world. You've got a book on the way, and the topic is employee engagement. So how did you get into this topic?
Well, the actual engagement piece a lot of times sat in specific HR. And so I had a lot of ideas, and I feel like I kept banging my head against stuff, and just, it felt like these things were obvious. Like, we're spending so much money on the end result, and what about the symptoms? Like, why are we not spending money on those pieces? And I wanted to make the workplace just a more pleasant place than I've experienced.
Wonderful. Well, we are both on the same mission, because I want to do the same. And so when we think about employee engagement, what does that mean? And how do organizations know if they've got a bad employee engagement or disengaged employees?
Right. So I think the world average is like 20% of people are engaged. US, we're about 30% engaged. So chances are good that you have a lot of people not engaged, but then there's the disengaged who are actively like working against you, right? So the people who are not engaged are kind of that like limbo. It's, you know, we act like everything's okay. So it's very hard to tell whether someone's upset. Most people won't tell you that there's something going on or something that's difficult. The engaged people have that great relationship with their boss. They feel valued. They give you that extra, I think it's like 12 to 20% extra that you get from a highly engaged person, that you just, you know, it's one of those things, Wendy, you don't really know. And it's so hard to get at that from inside. So sometimes it's good to bring like someone from the outside, whether it's a coach, consultant, whoever you rely on, to come in and actually talk to people. Someone who doesn't, you know, they don't rely on for their livelihood, isn't going to go back and tell everybody what everybody said. You can get some good information. And sometimes that CEO or that high level leader doesn't have any awareness, not because they're not trying to, but because we act differently, right? I act differently when I talk to my boss compared to when I talk to my team. And for some people, it creates an unhealthy environment. So,
yeah. And, you know, I think with larger organizations, you can do an employee survey and sometimes get that the feeling, you know, employees having that safe feeling that they can actually respond and be honest because there's so many employees. But when you have smaller organizations, I think it is sometimes difficult to get the real feedback from employees of how they're feeling about the environment. So bringing in a coach or a consultant to go in and listen, and I've done this with my clients, I'm sure you have as well. And it really is the practice that I like to have is I'm not going to go back and tell the CEO so-and-so said this and so-and-so, but it's more like, here's what I'm hearing from multiple people. There's a common theme here. Yeah. How can we address that?
And you want to make sure if you're bringing that person in that you're actually going to take what they're saying and they're going to do something about it. Because if I have all this information, I come back to the CEO and I'm like, if there are trends, you get some underlying undercurrent that might not get back to people inside. And yeah, it's really important to make sure you're going to do something with that.
Let's say that we give feedback to the CEO, and I'm sure depending on what the issue is, will depend on what the solution, you know, might be. But what do you typically see in working with organizations, areas that most likely need to be addressed?
You know, it's typically manager skills. We put people in manager positions who don't have the skills, and it's not their fault. It's just not, you know, you're doing your job and now you have managerial experience. You didn't just create another 6 or 7 hours a day to do that. So, and we typically don't train them. So giving a manager coaching skills, like that's what you want them to be. You don't want them managing. You want them coaching. You want them being there as an advocate for their team. You also want them to be able to tell when something isn't right. So you need relationships. I mean, people would always be like, Dawn, you don't have to like so-and-so just because they report to you. And I'm like, I do have to. I don't actually like to work with people that I don't like or don't like me. You know, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And when you know people, you understand, you see things. I know we think we like know people so well, but people are very good at acting like everything's okay.
Yes. And a lot of times, and I've heard you speak about this, and I think, you know, I'll kind of allude to the book a little bit, but that it really is a lot of about the relationship. I mean, that's really what you're saying, right? About the liking the employees or not, like it really boils down to what is that relationship like? And I know that I've personally had experiences and then as a coach and consultant, I've seen it as well, but personally having having friction with a colleague that impacts my work. And as a high performer, it's unsettling when that happens because you want to get your work done. But then the conflict happens. And so what are some tips that you provide leaders and how to deal with difficult, relationships?
Sometimes it's like, you know, coach couples counseling. You know, sending the two of them, you send them, you know, together so you understand the issue. But so often it's a communication thing. Somebody made an assumption because somebody did something and they've been using that the whole time when it had nothing to do. You know, I mean, it's just communication and it's our own issues that we bring into the workplace and kind of, you know, impose on other people. So that's where the mental health side comes in, trying to get people to like be more self-aware. Some ridiculous stat, 95% of us think we're self-aware, 10 to 15% of us actually are. And so if you're like, you know, some managers are coming in and they managed before and nobody said anything to them. So they're going to manage the same way. And that is not one that we do a good enough job from an HR, from an employee standpoint. Like when you leave, you're like, bye. You don't typically say like, this was awful, this and this, you know, you're told to, you know, not burn your bridges. Mm-hmm. So you want to make everything look fine. We can't correct this stuff. Unless people will kind of like raise their hand and say, this didn't work and this is why, but say it when you're there so someone could do something about it, right? It's not helpful when we just sit and we take it. You know, if something's not working, there has to be that safe space in organizations. And it's kind of empathy is a huge one. And really, you know, a quick story for me, I managed payroll for a while, but my payroll processor, she would have these panic attacks on like every other Friday when she needed to run payroll. And I knew she was out karaokeing last night. And I'm like, why can't we just get our payroll together? I suffer from depression. I can keep my stuff together. You wouldn't even know it. Fast forward 3 years and I had a panic attack. I'm like, oh my God, this was why she couldn't. It had nothing to do with where she went to karaoke the day before. Right. It was the payroll. So, you know, it's part of that, just being open-minded to whatever that person is going through. You know, I'm a very, you know, I give you every chance. I trust you immediately until you show me that you don't, but other people work the opposite way. And I think so many times we go, like, we manage to the lowest common denominator. And so then you're actually harming those regular performers and the high performers, because you're not going to even know that you're doing that to them. And that, I think, is around like policies and flexibility and things like that. One person's taking advantage of you. So you, other people, everyone else is put in, you know, lockdown.
Yeah. And, you know, just mental well-being, talking about the panic attack, and how have you found a way for to help leaders have more of an open conversation about that?
Yeah. So one thing, you know, if anyone's in HR or probably a leader in a small business, you've had someone come to you and said, I need to fire Wendy. Like, okay, have you had a conversation with Wendy? Well, not really. And what about reviews? They've been fine because I didn't want to, you know, cause any problems, but now I need to fire her. And so we've never had a conversation or anything like that. So I see performance as, and I talk like it's a cry for help. I know it's like we're trying to be nice, right? You have a bad day. And so we just like, okay, I'll handle it. And then all of a sudden, 6 months later, you've been handling it. And now it's something blew up because you didn't really know what you were doing. And that person should have been doing it. So if we, instead of sweeping it under the rug when something initially happens, we actually ask them like, hey, this isn't like you, you know, what's going on? Like, let me help you. I really found that people will be managed out of an organization instead of telling their manager or somebody there that they're going through, you know, something that's just, you know, horrible for them, mm-hmm. whether it's an illness or it's a divorce or it's money challenges. And so people are ashamed and embarrassed about these things. And so managers knowing what benefits the company has, where they could send people, who they could talk to, you know, that's kind of having that at your fingertips. And, you know, the scary conversations, you know, I had two guys come to me one time. They're like, John, my employee just told me that she's been in an abusive relationship. I'm like, but she's getting out. I'm like, okay, what did you say to her? We didn't know what to say, so we just hung up the phone.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like, you know, it's that one thing, like you can't do anything worse than not doing anything at all. And so right. like the person doesn't feel supportive, and like, you know, just having, I have some scripts for like managers to use where you like know the things not to say, because sometimes that's like, okay, don't say those things.
Right.
And like, these are the couple things. You don't have to say that much. You just need to be there to listen. And not judge. And, you know, the person didn't come in that day to make your life miserable. They're having something going on. And we don't leave our life at the door. It comes in with us. And the more that we can, you know, support that, then I think the easier it is to gain trust from employees and then gain that engagement.
Yeah. It's like you said, empathy and just being human and treating them like human beings, right?
Yeah.
You know, we all come with baggage or something that we, you know, left at the front door of the office. And, but sometimes it's a little more difficult to shrug off, you know, when you walk through the office doors or turn on your Zoom for your first call. and we are human, and because we can't shrug everything off at the door, there are things, you know, that are difficult topics to talk about that, we do, you know, that are taboo in the workplace. And I think, you've talked a little bit about, you know, how to have those conversations or what that looks like in the workplace.
Yeah. So for me, you know, I know HR sometimes difficult conversations are you're not getting paid enough, or, you know, you made something in the microwave that doesn't smell good and no one wants to smell it. For me, the difficult conversations are the ones that come up out of the blue, or we don't even know to ask. So, like, you know, menopause. I mean, if you look, it's like, I don't know, $1.8 billion it costs employers and productivity. And, you know, all those aspects of emotional. And typically in the workplace, or really anywhere, we joke about menopause and we joke about hot flashes. That's all anybody knows about menopause and what the temperature is. And there's so many other aspects to that. And there's so many, you know, for anybody who has the ability to have benefits, there is great, you know, little niche companies now that are doing, you know, family planning that goes from infertility all the way to menopause. Because we just, you know, like, I'm almost there, and like, you get forgotten about. It's just like, okay. And so knowing, and sometimes I think, you know, it's interesting. So, sometimes the male-female thing can play a definite role. If you have a guy that has a wife and he, you know, just had a baby, he'll be completely compassionate about, you know, those things typically. If you have a woman and, you know, she's going through something, she's thinking, I went through it, why can't you get through it? So it's very interesting, the dynamics there that happen. But most people don't have a policy for miscarriage. I know I had a miscarriage, and I had the, you know, the whatever on Friday, and I was back in on Monday. And there's not, like, there's a grieving process there. And for people with multiple, I don't know how you do that and how you stay on task at work and focused. And people don't know what to say to that one at all, because it's such a hard thing. And then you have, like, divorce, you have domestic abuse. You know, we all have history. You know, we all know somebody who got divorced, right? Like, and so bringing that's kind of the not what to say, what not to say. Like, no one wants to hear about your Uncle Harry who, you know, this and then that. Like, listen to them, because they're experiencing their experience. And it's almost like doing less is actually more helpful. Like, you're here, make sure you're someplace private. I'm listening. What can we do? Sometimes it's just being flexible, and maybe they need to come in an hour later, because now they have childcare that's shifted or changed. You just never know until you ask. And so many people won't ask.
And that goes back to the skill set of coaching that our managers don't have. And I heard a stat, I'm not going to try to repeat it because I won't remember the right number, but, you know, really, it's just common sense that employees are impacted more by their manager than they are the CEO or, you know, or senior leader, because that's who they're dealing with day to day. You wouldn't expect the CEO to go ask about how they're, you know, why they're feeling a certain way, but the manager, if we can equip them with those skills, it will help us with retention and engagement for sure. And so the scripts that you mentioned, do you provide manager scripts for all of these different areas, or is it certain topics that you have?
I have about 10 topics, and Wendy, I'm happy to send it to you, and you can send it out to your audience. It was kind of like my top 10 of things that I've had managers come to me about that they didn't know what to do and they felt bad. So it's kind of like the manager script of, this is how you have the conversation. This is why it's important for a business to pay attention to things like menopause and miscarriage. This is what you can say. This is when the employee gives pushback because they don't want you in their personal business, which we don't either. But we want you there supporting them and understanding what the options are. And if you're a really small business that doesn't have benefits, there's still community pieces. You know, like from where I am, there's, you know, domestic abuse shelters. Like, so knowing that that's there could mean a huge difference. And that's where you get that loyalty and engagement, when you go the little bit extra and you care about your employees.
And I think it even ties into inclusivity and belonging a little bit as well, because they are feeling a little, they're not feeling as isolated because of their circumstance. They're being heard and listened to.
I prefer the belonging piece. Mm-hmm. You know, the diversity, and we don't seem to be doing very well on that. And for me, belonging kind of takes it all into one big, and belonging was so often how I didn't feel. I don't think like other HR people, so I'd always have different ideas. And when I was younger, I didn't feel comfortable being like, okay, you guys said like 8 and I think it's 20.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not comfortable there yet. And even the things that I'm talking about in my book are things that I've been thinking about for years. And I'm starting to see like pieces in like more mainstream, mainly because of the pandemic and the mental health push there.
Yeah, I've heard statistics that, you know, that the younger generation, that they may be having more anxiety. I have a son who is a senior in college, and he came home for a week and then went back for the summer. I was driving him to the airport, and he said, I'm just really, I'm stressed. And I'm thinking, okay, you're going back to Boulder, Colorado, where you get to this, you know, you got a ski pass for the season, and, you know, you're living with all your buddies. Like, what could be stressful about that? And, you know, yeah. I was like, what's going on? And he said, you know, are you already worried about getting a job next year, a year later? And he said, yes, but it's also just the state of the world. Like, I think they're carrying this extra burden, you know, right now. And so I think just us being aware, just having the awareness of mental well-being is a great start. Because it's not going away.
It needs to get pushed deeper and deeper, like lower and lower in the schools. Because, you know, I always wonder whether they have more stress and pressure than we had, or are we just now asking them? Because nobody asked us before. Right. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. There really were no feelings in my household, you know, nobody was asking how I was feeling. Yeah. So I do think that our generation being open to actually asking them is allowing them to express that more and understand that that's what that is. And maybe it's not healthy. And what can we do about it?
Right. Yeah. And I think we're around the same generation, same age. And I mean, because I was thinking, well, maybe things are worse off. But then I thought, no, like, we thought Russia was going to invade, and I thought a bomb was going to be dropped on us. So, you know, those were real fears for us. So, anyway, really, really great, great stuff. We've covered making sure that managers have coaching skills, that we're talking about things, we're having empathy. I'm excited about your book coming out in the fall. Anything else you want to leave us with before we wrap?
I'll just put another plug in for mental well-being. That's kind of the ground floor for everything with me, with that and the relationships. If you help someone become more comfortable with themselves and know themselves better, that just enhances them and their effectiveness in the workplace.
And I believe that this audience are really people first leaders. And so I know that this is in their heart. And I think sometimes it's just difficult to know what to do. So I think you really provided some great tips and insights. And we'll be looking for your book. Where can people find you today? Where can I send them in the show notes?
LinkedIn. It's the easiest place.
Okay, great. All right. Well, Dawn, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks, it's been a pleasure.
Wendy. Yes, thank you. Take care.
Thanks. What a great episode. Okay, here are my takeaways. Number one, only 20% of employees globally are engaged, and 30% of U.S. employees are engaged. So there's a good chance that you have employees that are not engaged. Number two, Engaged employees feel valued, have a good relationship with their manager, and give you an extra 12 to 20%. Number three, sometimes you need to bring in a coach or consultant to help bring awareness to where there are engagement opportunities. Number four, relationships are important to productivity and engagement. Number five, when dealing with difficult relationships at work, sometimes coaching can be helpful. We find it is usually about open communication and our own stories that we may bring to the relationship. Number six, 95% of us believe we are self-aware, and only 10 to 15% are actually self-aware. Number seven, exit interviews are important and add even more value when you can share before leaving the organization what isn't working. Number eight, have empathy for your employees. Be open-minded to what your employees may be going through. Number nine, poor performance is a cry for help. Instead of sweeping it under the rug, give your employees the opportunity to share when they're going through something difficult that is impacting their performance, and have resources to provide. Number 10, pay attention and have awareness of your employees and their mental well-being. If you help someone know themselves better, that just enhances their experience in the workplace. That's it. Thank you for listening. If you want to connect with Dawn and find out more about those manager scripts that she mentioned, I'll link to her LinkedIn page in the show notes. And if you know someone that may find this episode or this podcast as a whole helpful, please go to Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast, grab a link and send it to your friend. My goal is to get this into the ears of leaders who are looking for solutions to build a better people-first culture. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next week.